Welcome to Yoga with Subhash. I am pleased to present an audio recording of the workshop that I presented on September 19th, 2015. This was a continuation of the topic of Kundalini and the chakras. And in this workshop, I began the discussion of the seven chakras and focused in this workshop on chakras number 1 and 2. And as a part of the discussion, we discussed all the characteristics associated with the first two chakras, number of petals, the seed or the bija mantra, what are the deities associated with it, what are the letters of the Sanskrit language, what's the animal associated with it, and many other characteristics. I hope you enjoy it. As always, I would love to get your feedback. So welcome everybody again, and you know, just like you all, I also find this topic of Kundalini very fascinating. When I read about it, it really boggles my mind as to, you know, how these ancient yogis, they were able to think at such, you know, in such great depth about things which we don't see. And these are all invisible things, and they're all psychic things, and yet they were able to give so much detail, it's totally mind-boggling to me. Just a very quick overview of what we did last time, for those who were not here last time. We kind of basically try to understand what Kundalini is, and what are the, we covered basically the topic of Kundalini and nadis. Does anyone remember what nadis are? Nadi?
Nerve channels.
All the nervous channels, sort of the psychic nerve currents, okay? The psychic subtle nerve currents that carry energy, prana. Prana is the word for energy or vital life current, as we call it. That's prana. So instead of calling it anything else, I would like to call it prana, if everyone's okay with that. Okay, because any translation really kind of it's not easily understood then. Okay, so these are all related to prana and, you know, the vital life energy. Okay, so Kundalini is, like we said, it's the vital life force, you can say. It's a shakti. Shakti is another name for force, energy, which normally lies dormant at the base of the spine. And we talked about why it is dormant and why is it sleeping and all that. Last time we went over all that, so I'm not going to repeat all that. So, but the idea is that, you know, we need to awaken that sleeping Kundalini. It's a pair, you know, it's a couple, you can say, Kundalini at the base of the spine, and then its master, the Supreme Consciousness, you know, which according to the Tantra philosophy is named Shiva. Okay, so Shiva resides here, and this is the location for the Shakti. And it's the separation of the two that causes all the problems in life. That's how they explain it, right? They need to be together. They belong together. They're part of the same aspect. Okay, that's why Shiva is called Ardhanarishvara. What does that mean, Ardhanarishvara?
Half man, half woman.
Half male, half female. That's the name given to Shiva because he represents both aspects, both the male aspect as well as the female aspect, the creator and the supreme consciousness. So if the Shakti is the creator, Shiva is the supreme consciousness, and they belong together. But, and I explained that last time, why did they get separated and all that, but now they're separate. All right? And that's not a very happy situation because it's the separation which allows other elements, other forces, other, so to say, bad elements, if you want to call it, to take over and then create a mess with our life. And for the most part, these elements are called the gunas. Everyone remember the gunas? The three gunas? What are the three gunas? Sattva, rajas, and Tamas. Sattva, Rajas and Tamas, they start playing their own role, and that's what causes a lot of the imbalances, lot of the disturbances in the body, mind and everywhere, and we are in trouble most of the time. Trouble in the sense we are stressed out and feel the pain and suffering of life. So, and also then, you know, the breathing becomes very disturbed and uneven, and everything kind of gets messed up because of that separation. Okay, so to create a balance in life and to create harmony in life, we have to make the effort to bring the sleeping kundalini, awaken it first, and then slowly have it move up and then go to merge with Shiva, the Supreme Consciousness that resides here. Now, there are several obstacles. So, before the kundalini can merge with Shiva, it has to overcome a very large number of obstacles. What are the obstacles? Take a guess. What are the obstacles?
Chakras
is one. What else? Chakras, yep.
Lifestyle.
No, in terms, yeah, lifestyle, but what does it manifest in?
Food.
Nadis.
Imbalance of the nadis is another obstacle. I'm talking in terms of the physiology of these, so-called physiology of the kundalini and chakras. Well, the first obstacle is the kundalini is sleeping. Kundalini is asleep. That's the first obstacle we have to overcome. We have to awaken that kundalini. Second is, it has to go up the channel, right? But the channel is blocked itself. So we have to open the channel, right? That's number two obstacle. Even though the channel might be open, then there are those six chakras on the way. And they become like gates, locked gates. You know, unless they are unlocked, kundalini has no way to go through them, right? So those gates have to be opened. And they are not one. Six of them. Even if one is open, it can go to the second gate. If it finds it locked, it might get tired there and go back to sleep. Come back and go back to sleep. Which is what happens for a lot of people, actually. Because they are able to open one or two gates, and come the third gate, which is a little bit harder to open, they say. So it doesn't get opened, so it goes back to sleep. Almost back to the status quo, you know, nothing has happened as if. Okay? So multiple obstacles come in the way of the kundalini going up and eventually merging with its supreme boss, the Shiva. Alright? So last time we talked about the nadis, the three predominant nadis. Everyone remember those three nadis? Three most important nadis? Ida, Pingala and Sushumna. Those are the three nadis. The Ida nadi is kind of, this is identified with the left nostril, the Pingala with the right nostril. They all start at the Muladhara chakra, that's the base of the spine. They start there.
What is the last nadi?
Sushumna. Sushumna. Ida, Pingala and Sushumna. Ida, Ida. And they emanate at the base of the spine. That's where the Muladhara chakra is. Then there are six chakras. And we looked at the picture of the six chakras last time. And they go and crisscross at those chakras like this. And finally end up, some say, in the Ajna chakra, which is here. And most people tend to believe that from the Ajna chakra, they go into the nostrils. Okay? Ida ends up here. Pingala ends up here on the right side. So Ida is identified with something which is female, and Pingala with something which is male. Male, female, positive, negative, masculine, feminine, right? Hot, cold, etc., etc. Left side of the brain, right side of the brain. Those are the kind of identifications for the Ida and Pingala. Energy, the prana flows through them most of the time. Sushumna is blocked. Kundalini can only flow through Sushumna. That's it. That's a given. But Sushumna is blocked. At the very base of the spine, it's blocked by the granthi. We talked about that granthi. It's a block, right? Okay? So right at the very base of the spine, there is a kind of you can say a lock at the channel there. Unless that is opened, it cannot go through. The other obstacle is, as long as there is imbalance between the Ida and Pingala, as long as there is imbalance, that means if the Ida is more dominant and the Pingala is less dominant or vice versa, the energy cannot flow through Sushumna. So the first requirement is that the flows in the two channels has to be balanced. Ida and Pingala has to be balanced. Which means, if at any time if you look at your breathing, right, always there is a slight imbalance. Everyone try that. Try some forced breath in and out a couple of times and see if there is one nostril which is a little more freer than the other. For most people, yes.
Question. When we practiced the breathing, when we did the locks and held the breath in the meditation class, is that kind of a precursor to trying to open
it? Absolutely, yes. Absolutely, yes. That's one of the techniques which helps us cleanse some of the chakras and also balance out the prana in the system. Yeah, we'll talk about that, you know, how that helps. Okay, so there are a few things that we have to do, right? First of all, create a balance between the two pranas, between the left side and the right side. Then work on the individual chakras. Cleanse the chakras and, you know, make their functionality more amenable for the kundalini to flow through them. Okay, so that's rough idea. I guess you get the basic background now. So let us see now. This is what is a chakra and details of each chakra. Nadi system, we already talked about it last time. Methods of awakening, kundalini. Koshas, we'll try and see how that works. Okay, let me just go to the next one. The word chakra itself means anything that's round is called a chakra. Okay, so there are multiple ways you can look at it. Like, for example, people from India know what is a Kala chakra. Anybody know what a Kala chakra is?
That is time, wheel of time.
The wheel of time. We are going through these cycles, wheel of time. Okay. That's okay. So chakra is anything that is round, and a wheel in a vehicle is also called a chakra, right? So the chakras are round. They are in English they call them vortex, V-O-R-T-E-X, which is like a spinning wheel, you can say. Okay, they're constantly spinning wheels of what they call it, bioelectric energy or something like bioenergetic energy, bioelectric energy. Okay? And this energy is all driven by prana in the system. Remember that. Prana is the vital life energy. Okay? So these chakras basically, they deal with prana. They deal with vital life energy. They get the energy, manipulate the energy, and then, you know, distribute the energy in the system depending on what the state of the chakra is at that time. All right, and there are seven main chakras. Now, remember, first of all, these chakras are not physical entities. Okay, so if you do an anatomical surgery of the body, you will not see a chakra. Okay, these are all subtle formations to, you know, and people have, obviously there are stories of people opening their chakras and looking at their colors and everything, and then going up the spine, kundalini moving up. There's all kinds of stories, right? I'm sure people have anybody read those stories? Anybody? You've read some, right? If you read this book called The Autobiography of a Yogi, lots of stories like that. But there are many others. Gopi Krishna's famous story and many, many others. But many people have. It's not something new. So these chakras are not physical entities, but subtle balls of energy, you can call them. Okay? And there are seven of them. So Mooladhara is the... Moola means... And we're going to go through this. Let me... I don't think we need to go through the list like this. Does everyone know the names by now? We went through the names last time. Okay. Let me ask you one thing, if you don't mind. Repeat after me the names of all these in Sanskrit. It's important. Mooladhara.
Mooladhara.
Swadhisthana.
Swadhisthana.
Manipura.
Manipura.
Anahata.
Anahata.
And Vishuddhi.
Vishuddhi.
Ajna.
Ajna.
Sahasrara.
Sahasrara.
Okay, so these are the seven chakras. Okay, all these are Sanskrit words. So the Mooladhara is the... Moola means the root, base of anything. That's called the Moola. So Moola means the root. And that's at the base of the spine. Actually, we'll go through the individual slides. That will be much, much better. This shows a picture of the correspondence between the chakras and the glands. Now, this is obviously an afterthought by people, you know, who started looking at the chakras and looking at the physical physiology and tried to see if there is a correlation. In the ancient texts that I have seen so far, there is no mention of the physical glands on the system. Okay? So this is a later evolution. What people found was that, you know, these physical or the physiological glands, they either impact the chakras or chakras impact them. And that's why they created this correlation. So it happens to be that they are close to these glands and therefore they have interactions. Okay, so this is the correlation that they have found. Okay, so let's look at the Mooladhara chakra first. All right. So, like I said, the meaning Moola means the root or the base. Adhara means support. Okay, so root support, base support, whatever that means. Now, where is it located? At the very base of the spine, around the perineum area. You know, it's a rough approximation. If you read some of the texts, they will tell you it's slightly different location for the males and some slightly different for the females, but approximately in that area. Okay. Now, each chakra has its own element. Okay, association with the element. And the characteristics of the chakra will depend on what element it represents. So when we talk of the elements, what are we talking about? Five elements, right? They're called Pancha Maha Bhuta. That's the word, it's called in Sanskrit. Pancha. Pancha means five. Maha is great. And Bhuta is elements. So Pancha Maha Bhuta are the five great elements. Earth, water, fire, air and ether, right? So the first five chakras, they are identified with the five elements. The sixth and seventh chakra, they have transcended this physical manifestation. Therefore, they don't have any identification with the bhutas, with the elements, because they have transcended that already. You can get to the sixth chakra only after you have transcended the reality of these five bhutas, five elements. Okay, so there's no, only the first five are identified with the physical, the elements. So the number one is the element earth. Earth is identified with the sense of smell. Each one of them has a sense associated with it. Okay, so the sense of smell is identified with the earth element. Now, the reason, you know, that's why I said, you know, I'm really very intrigued by these details. Now, each of these chakras has a certain number of petals. They represent the petals of a lotus flower. So, for example, the base chakra has four petals, the next one has six, the next one has 10, 16, 12, etc., etc., and they add up to 50. Total number of petals, okay, up to the sixth chakra. And each petal is also identified with one of the letters of the Sanskrit language, one of the alphabets. There are 50 alphabets in the Sanskrit language, and each letter represents that alphabet. Each alphabet of the Sanskrit language has its own characteristics, its own description. What are its characteristics, what are the powers, what are the forces it represents, and all that. So each of those petals represents those characteristics. When you chant that letter, that alphabet, it becomes a mantra for that particular petal. And it becomes the seed mantra for that. When you chant that mantra, it creates positive vibrations in some of those nadis that emanate from that chakra. The number of petals in any chakra basically corresponds to the number of nadis, number of subtle elements, subtle nerve currents that it stimulates. I mean, just imagine the amount of detail these people have gone into. That's why I say, when I read the details, my mind spins. How could they have thought about such great details? Then there is a deity associated with that. Again, that deity has certain characteristics. Once you meditate on the deity, you get all the characteristics of the deity. There's an animal associated with each chakra. That animal represents certain characteristics, and you're supposed to meditate on that animal for that. Okay? It's amazing. It's truly amazing how, they have given all the details. Okay? So these are the four petals, and these are the letters of the Sanskrit alphabet that are listed on those petals. Vam, Sham, etc. Now, every one of these five lower chakras is also identified with one of the five airs. Does everyone remember? We talked about that five vayus or five airs. What are the five airs? Nobody remembers? Yep. There you go. Somebody remembers. Okay, so the five vayus are prana, apana, vyana, samana, and udana. Okay. What are these? Remember, prana is the vital life energy. Prana is the vital life energy. And prana is a composite of five different functions in the body. This whole prana is a composite of five different functions in the body. And these five functions are given these names of prana, apana, samana, udana, and vyana. All right? A very, very, I would say, 10,000-foot view of these five is the prana is the upward flow, apana is the downward flow, samana is the inward, vyana is this, which goes everywhere, udana is upward, which is mostly active at the time of death. Okay, and then all the physiological functions, all the mental functions, they are all controlled by different combinations of these five pranas. All right, that's why I'm saying there is just so much detail in this whole thing, it's mind-boggling. You start reading it, and your head begins to spin. Okay, now, each of these five chakras, the lower five chakras, is also identified with the function of one of these pranas. So, just keep looking at the number of variables that we're talking about. And all these variables will play a role in the health of the chakra. It becomes such a complex entity. All right? If you go to my website, I have an article on the five pranas. And I encourage you to read that because it's a very detailed article on what the five pranas are, what their functions are at different levels, physical, physiological, mental, emotional, and spiritual. Okay? And so the apana vayu, like I said, is the downward force. It is responsible for all excretions.
So in the fourth chapter, the second is Shem and the fourth is Shem. Is there any difference?
Yeah. There are three. Remember in Sanskrit there are three shas. Sa, sha, sha. Remember those? There are three letters. Sam, sham, sham. Okay, there are slight differences in these sounds. Okay, so there is vam, this is sam, this is sham, this is sham. Okay, so now, to complicate the matters further, each chakra has a seed mantra. Seed mantra. Seed is the bij mantra. There is a whole concept of what a bij mantra is. Again, that's why I'm saying it's complicated, the whole thing. Bij mantra is the seed sound which, when repeated, will actually help activate that chakra. Okay, that vibration of this mantra resonates with the overall configuration of this chakra. So the five seed mantras are Lam for the lowest chakra, Lam, Vam, Ram, Yam and Ham. Lam, Vam, Ram, Yam, Ham. That's how they go. Okay, so the lowest one is Lam. So when you do the awakening of the chakra, you will sit down and first thing you have to do is to chant Lam, Lam. With the focus on that chakra, mentally focusing on it, Lam. This is what we did last time. Remember, if you remember, we'll do that today again, that meditation, okay, with this chanting. All right? Now here is the most, you know, some of the important things. The function of this root chakra is grounding, ground, survival, solidity, okay? It is what provides us the support, basically. Let's say it's the stability of the entire being. All right? And when it's malfunctioning, you have all kinds of problems like weight problem, constipation, sciatica. Now, these are some of the things that I've picked up from more recent literature. You know, this is not something that I found in any of the ancient books. But some of the more recent literature, they try to identify these problems when this chakra is malfunctioning. Okay? Now, there's an element animal here, elephant. Again, elephant, you know, heaviness, stability, strength, support, all that is represented by the elephant. And elephant also happens to be the main vehicle for
Lakshmi.
For?
Lakshmi.
Lakshmi plus Indra. Indra's main vehicle is Airavat. Okay, that's the elephant. Okay, these are all mythological stories, right? I mean, they have great meaning, deep meaning. If you go into the depth, each one of these mythological stories has meaning. Okay, but this elephant represents stability, and it's the vehicle for Indra. Indra is the lord of all the gods. He is the super god, so to say. Okay. This lotus has yellow square, downward triangle, and there is a Shiva lingam right in the middle. Lingam means, what does the word lingam mean? Symbol. Lingam means a symbol. So Shiva lingam means Shiva's symbol, which is represented by just a stick like this, you can say. Something like this. It's called the Shiva lingam. And this kundalini shakti is shown. This kundalini is shown wrapped around that Shiva lingam 3.5 times. 3.5 coils. Right?
So, most of these malfunctions are problems of the Western world.
problems of the human world.
Well, okay, human world. So in order to get to the top, you have to work your way from the bottom.
Yes.
And, okay.
Yes.
So you can't get anywhere until you get rid of that.
Right. Yes. Yeah. No, it's not Western world, it's human. Mm-hmm. That's human, you know, all over the universe. You know, that's exactly everywhere. Okay.
How do we know that any of these chakras are open? Does it show in... I mean, you said that...
People say, you know, again, I can only speak based on what I've read. I don't practice Kundalini Yoga myself, so I have no experience. I think I mentioned that last time. Okay. I practice Patanjali's Yoga. That's my favorite. Okay, that's my path is Patanjali's Yoga. That's what I study and practice. To practice Kundalini, you need a teacher. Okay, you cannot practice it on your own. Unlike Patanjali's Yoga, which you can practice on your own. Okay. So I will not even get close to practicing this unless I get a good teacher. And I haven't found one. I was very close to getting one when I was visiting India, but it didn't work out. Okay. And I haven't heard of anybody who is good enough to teach here in this area. All right. So what they tell me is, you know, what the books say is that you will start getting signals, basically. Okay. Certain kind of colors, you know, when you sit in meditation, so you start seeing some colors or some vibrations or some movement, some warmth in the spinal column, etc. And depending on where that warmth is, where that movement is, where that feeling is, then you will roughly know where chakra is activated. But again, I don't have a good enough answer to that because I have never felt it myself. Good question. All right. So the Kundalini is coiled 3.5 times. And last time we talked about the significance of why 3.5. What does it mean? Well, I mean, this is again interpretation by a lot of different yogis. So what's 3.5? It's roughly the same significance as the Om symbol. 3.5, 1, 2, 3, and this half. Same thing. It's very similar to the symbology for Om symbol. So the three symbols, the three coils represent, again, there are multiple interpretations, but the most common is that one coil is the waking state, the second is the dream state, third is the dreamless, deep sleep state, and the half is the transcendence. You transcend those three states, and that's represented by that half, 3.5 coils. Of course, there are other interpretations. You know, the gunas are again a very common way to represent these three because it is the gunas which are really causing all the problems. So this Kundalini represents those three gunas. Okay? All right? So three gunas, rajas, tamas, and sattva. And the half is what's called the... Anybody remember the Sanskrit name for the state beyond gunas? Transcendent. Sanskrit name? Anybody?
Turiya. Turiya?
Turiya is the waking state.
Okay.
Guna, that's all just gunatit. Gunatit is the state for where you have transcended the gunas. Guna plus atit, beyond. Turiya is the state which is the transcendent state after waking, dream, and the dreamless sleep. That's a very good observation. That's called Turiya. Excellent. Okay, so the symbolism of Mooladhara, like I mentioned, these four petals They represent the four prominent nerve currents that emanate and are influenced by these chakras, by this chakra, this one. So there are four petals and four vibrational patterns going out through these four nadis. The triangle at the bottom is the serpent coil 3.5 times. The vehicle or bija, elephant. So, you know, I think we've talked about most of these now. And seven trunks. Okay, the elephant is supposed to have seven trunks. Okay, so again, details. You know, seven trunks. And they say these are the seven different constituents of the body. This is according to most, if you know Ayurveda, this is what they say. The body is made up of earth, fluids, blood, flesh, fat, bone marrow. This is according to Ayurveda. Okay? So those people have added their interpretation. All right. The deity is child Brahma. And Brahma, what's Brahma? We're getting into all that now. What's Brahma?
Son of Vishnu.
Who's Vishnu?
Mahavishnu.
Again, we're getting into all that, right? So Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, they are the three trinities, as they're called. Okay. You know, in the Indian way of thinking, God is one, right? There is just one God. But when people started studying that concept, they realized it's not easy to understand that concept. So they added more stuff to it. So the original knowledge was in the Vedas. Everyone knows what Vedas are? What's Vedas?
Threads of knowledge.
Hmm?
The ocean of knowledge.
Well, the whole collection of knowledge, ancient knowledge. And that's, you know, Vedas, and then the Upanishads are the essence of the knowledge. And in the Upanishads they say, you know, there's only one God, and that's all there is, nothing else is there. But then people got confused, so they tried to explain that through all these fairy tale-like stories, and they were known as Puranas. Anybody heard of Puranas? Purana? No? Okay, fairy tale stories. To explain what all these big concepts are. What's life, what's God, what's self-realization, what's liberation, all that stuff. So as per that fairy tale stories, they had to create three different gods. Okay, one was assigned the job of creating this universe, and he was given the name Brahma. The other was assigned the job of sustaining this universe, and he was called
Vishnu.
And the third was assigned the job of sort of dissolving the whole thing at the end of this cycle. Like I said, Kala Chakra. Remember the word we used was Kala Chakra, this whole cycle of creation. Okay, so when the chakra ends, comes back to the full circle, that's called dissolution. And that job was assigned to Shiva. Okay, so there are three deities, three gods, so to say.
So they are not mentioned in Vedas, Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva.
Well, they represent the knowledge which was given through the Vedas.
Right.
Okay, but they are to explain what the content of the Vedas are. The idea is to understand, eventually go back and understand the Vedas, but that's very abstract kind of knowledge. If you read the Upanishads, it's very abstract. It's not easy to understand. You have to be a super intellectual to understand that, all that stuff. This is easy stuff, right? And this one, people fly, people do whatever they want to do, you know. Right? Everyone knows that. Okay, so this is the Brahma. So that's the child Brahma. And he has four heads, physical self, rational. Let's not go through all these very details. Now, this is something we need to understand. You know, the Mooladhara, because it's at the very base, it represents earth. Therefore, as it relates to physical body, the health, survival, material needs, all the fears and phobias that we have, they all are, you know, based on the state of the Mooladhara chakra. Grounding, you know, if you are really well grounded, you are in the present moment, more power to you, right? You're more stable then. And you're going to identify then with the earth's vitality, humility, etc., etc. Help cope with stress. Only a tool, not a goal. Okay, survival is the financial security. Do I need to go through this or you can read this? Is it okay? Now, also identified, like I said, with the four petals, or each of the petals, there's a what's called a vritti. Vritti is, what is a vritti?
Tendency.
Very good. The English word that most commonly people use is propensity. And I had to look up the dictionary to find out what that means. Anybody heard the term propensity?
Mm-hmm. Inclination.
Inclination. Inclination. Same thing that you said. So that's what the word vritti means. And each one of these 50 petals is identified with one vritti, one propensity. Inclination, so to say. And the four petals of the Mooladhara chakra represent dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Now I can, you know, people can spend a whole hour just talking about these four. Right? You can spend a lot of time as to what exactly are these four. Very briefly, anybody want to summarize what these four are? What do they represent?
Purushartha.
Purushartha. Mm-hmm. Very good. So this is what represents our objective in life, so to say. This is what we need to get to achieve our final goal. So dharma means, what is dharma?
What is right and what is wrong?
What is right and what is wrong? Righteousness is called dharma. You know, live a life based on the injunctions that were given in the ancient scriptures, which came from the Supreme Consciousness, not created by man. Okay? Because these injunctions came through the deep meditative states of these yogis, through higher channels, therefore they become dharma for us. They were not created by human mind. Anything created by human mind cannot become a dharma. But then it is influenced by the ego. Okay? So, these guidelines that came to the yogis through their meditation became dharma for us. They wrote down what we should do in life. What is good for us, what is bad for us, what is right for us, what is wrong for us. We follow that, that becomes dharma. Everyone got that? Artha means, I've written wealth. Artha also means purpose in life, wealth or purpose. You know, what is your purpose in life? Okay, that's artha, wealth also, you know. So we want for survival, we want some money for some, you know, in those days it used to be, you know, how many cows do you have and how many, you know, animals you have, how many farms you have, etc., etc. That was the time. So that was artha at that time. Kama is the physical desire to have more money, desire to have more property maybe. But basically, everything that we desire, everything that we have, should be based on the injunctions of dharma. It should never violate the dharma principle. That's the whole idea here. When you do that, when you lead a life which is based on dharma, then you make your living based on dharma, have all your desires based on dharma, then eventually you will be able to succeed in pursuing the goals of moksha. What is moksha? What's moksha?
It's release from life cycles.
Liberation. Release from Kala Chakra. Release from this whole cycle of life and death. That's moksha. Moksha is self-realization, basically. Liberation. Okay, now let me pause here and let me take a pulse here. Is this making any sense or no? Is anybody falling asleep or? Okay.
I just want to say you teach this better than any of the teachers in my training.
Oh boy!
Please.
Thank you, but you know I'm a novice at this. You know I.
But you just do a great job.
So you know I don't know it enough so that you know if I misstate something it's because you know it's not my topic. Okay. So what I've also listed here is a few physical activities that you can do to stimulate these chakras, okay, different chakras. So we're not going to go through this now, but these are the physical asanas and some of the things that you can. So you remember we talked about the bandhas. That's where I've written Mula Bandha here. That's the root lock which we can do to stimulate this chakra. Okay? So, and I'm going to send you a copy of, you know, this whole thing. Everyone will get a copy of this, so don't worry about all this.
So, is there, in a way, Patanjali's yoga is also stimulated by different asanas. They are also working on the chakras.
Although okay.
Maybe he's, Patanjali's yoga is not saying
so that Patanjali did not mention the word Kundalini anywhere in the sutras. Nowhere. There is only a very slight reference, very slant reference to a couple of the chakras there, or nadis maybe. Only very small. And I will be referring to them later on. Okay. But his idea was to just control the mind somehow. Patanjali's whole emphasis was to control the mind, calm the mind. Okay. So he did not delve into the Kundalini aspect at all. But the subsequent, the text called the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, which is the guiding text for all practices that are now called yoga, okay, which includes physical stretching, breathing practices, meditation and all that stuff, that text decided to combine the elements of Kundalini also into that whole discourse. So the Hatha Yoga Pradipika has a very strong element of Kundalini and chakras and all that. So when you do these practices of asana pranayama, you're automatically also working on the Kundalini, whether you know it or not. It's a part of that whole discussion.
Would it be correct to say that all yoga considers the chakras as part of its practice?
Yoga, the practice of yoga, yes.
So,
not Patanjali's yoga.
Okay.
You know, let me distinguish between the two. There is this whole philosophical content of yoga called Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. Okay, Yoga Sutras. That's the origin of all the knowledge that we today have about yoga. Okay. Based on that, subsequent yogis brought up these practical things, okay? And one of the most important texts in that category is Hatha Yoga Pradipika, which came only about 1,000 years ago. Patanjali's, nobody knows, but let's say 2,000, 3,000 years ago at least. Some say more than 5, who knows? The Hatha Yoga Pradipika is less than 1,000 years old. And that is where he combined the elements from Patanjali as well as Kundalini into the practice of yoga, which is now called Hatha Yoga. All right? And there's a mention of chakras, nadis, everything, and how to work on them. Okay, is that
clear? Scott, I was reading the book that I mentioned to you in the email about swara.
Yes, swara yoga. Yeah.
So he, the author, Rishi, the author is a woman, says that the two different groups, potentially is yoga, the goal in there is to use the mind to control prana, whereas the tantric traditions, like the kundalini, use the prana to control the mind. So it's two.
In a sense, that is to some extent.
Yeah.
Some extent that is true.
Yeah.
Whereas in the kundalini, there is really not a whole lot of talk of the mind, control of the mind. It's just controlling the kundalini and raising its level and doing some cleansing stuff. You will not see in the text of the kundalini itself not a whole lot of mention about the mental clarity. Not much. But that statement is roughly correct. Yeah.
Subhash, I was afraid to ask a question about this because it'll be a dumb question.
Is there ever?
What I'm hearing is that if we're talking about chakras, we're talking about kundalini too.
Yes.
Go together.
They go together, yes.
And you don't have chakras without kundalini being part of that system.
That's true, yes. Chakras are a part of the kundalini system of yoga. Or kundalini system of philosophy, you can say. Chakras and nadis, they are an integral part of that kundalini.
So then kundalini is sort of the center, the foundation of...
Right, yes.
Can I ask another question? Is it expected that most people who study Hatha Yoga, the goal is to have kundalini?
That's individual. That's very individual. Like, I practice Hatha Yoga, right? My goal is not to work on the kundalini. Like I said, you know, I'm not initiated into that field at all. So I don't think of kundalini when I practice yoga. I think of my mind when I practice yoga. Okay, that's very individual as to what your focus is. There are some people who practice Hatha Yoga purely for the purpose of awakening and awakening the kundalini and cleansing the chakras.
I see yoga billed, advertised as kundalini yoga.
She is the certified teacher.
Okay.
In that system of yoga called kundalini yoga.
Okay.
But there's one school of kundalini yoga. Is kundalini yoga is taught by Yogi Bhajan. And he was the main person that came to this country in 1969 who formed a school that teaches kundalini yoga around the world.
But to me, I don't know enough. And you know, what I have heard is that even, you know, he kind of promoted the Sikh culture. Sikh is one of the religious factions in India. So he promoted the Sikh culture, but the purest among the Sikhs, they do not recognize that, his approach to kundalini. The purest in the kundalini system yoga, they do not approve of his approach. So he is kind of somewhere in the middle, but he became very popular.
It's interesting because I'm getting at a point, you know, in my practice that I'm kind of questioning this Yogi Bhajan, and I'm wanting to step away from that and move on to a more original vein of where it came from.
I have attended a few of the kundalini yoga classes, and to my surprise, I found that the teachers who were teaching this stuff, they knew nothing about kundalini.
Yeah.
Nothing. They just know the practices that Yogi Bhajan taught them, and they just do those practices almost blindly, without knowing anything about kundalini. None of them, I have attended classes from three teachers, they did not know the Sanskrit names of any of the chakras, none of them. They could not pronounce any of these names. So it is very different, okay? You know.
It's very religious. It's very, you know, it really brings the Sikhism into it. It's very religious. There's a lot of dogma, you know, in his teachings. So I don't want to be negative, but, you know, that's kind of how I feel now that I've been with it for 3 years now, and I'm you know, kind of a little
more
skeptical about it.
Practical oriented. They just practice. They do all these practices called Kriya, etc., and hoping that, you know, things will work out. That's it.
Here's your friend is back on, sir.
Okay.
My last question.
Yeah, don't have to have a last question. Please ask.
One of the things that in the accounts I've read, Gopi Krishna and this woman, Christina Groff, who experienced Kundalini awakening at childbirth twice, that it's dangerous.
It is.
That it's not something to be trifled with.
Absolutely, you're right. It's absolutely true. It can be dangerous. That's why, you know, it's very, very strongly recommended that you need a good teacher to study and practice Kundalini. It's very important. And that's part of the reason I don't want to delve into that myself, you know, without finding a reliably good teacher. Because there are so many descriptions of people who have experienced very negative effects because they're physically and mentally were not ready for this Kundalini awakening, but it happened for some reason or the other, and they got into a lot of mess.
With the practice of Hatha Yoga, you are still focusing on these body parts that are represented by the chakras.
Right. Uh-huh.
So they're just called different things with different aims.
Give me an example of what you mean.
Well, for example, with the Kundalini, you begin with the root chakra, and you way up with the meditations and the reciting and the chanting and so forth. In the Hatha Yoga, you are working on the same organs,
right,
that are represented by the,
right,
chakras.
So yes,
it's all related. It's just called different things.
Yes, you're right. Absolutely, it's all interrelated. In fact, like I said, in the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, they said, you know, you're working on these chakras basically. So when you do the Mula Bandha, when you squeeze the perineum and lift those muscles up, you're actually energizing the Mula Chakra, Muladhara Chakra. Okay. Okay.
So when we do sun salutations, Bhashi, at that time also the different postures
represent, you know, if you read the description, you know, on my website also I've written. So there's a chakra involved in each one of those movements.
Okay.
Which chakra it is, you know, that depends. Again, you have to be focused on that.
Yeah.
If you don't focus on it, you know, then you're not really working on it very. It's a lot of it is mental. You know, you mentally focus on those chakras and those colors and those variables. Then only the chakras get activated, apparently. So all these kriyas that they do, you really have to focus on individual chakra. Okay, and there are, in the traditional ancient kriya yoga, there are, I think, some 52 such practices. Okay, and this book that I have from Bihar School of Yoga, that lists about 20 of those practices, most important ones. Okay?
Can I ask one more last question? Also, I've read accounts where this seems to happen spontaneously.
It can happen.
Where people don't expect it.
It can happen.
I actually have a student right now who that happened unexpectedly. He ended up in a psychiatric hospital.
Yes.
And he was diagnosed as having bipolar a condition and put on psychiatric medication. And then the psychiatrist realized that it wasn't a psychiatric condition, that it was something different. So now he's coming off the medicine, and I'm working with him on that. And very careful with him about guiding him on how to protect himself from having another experience like that.
Yeah. That's what I've heard. It's people may think they're losing their mind or something like
that. Oh, yeah, that's what happened to him.
Who knows?
No more questions.
Yeah, we'll have one more last question sometime. Okay, let's move on.
323.
Okay, so the next one is the Swadhisthana Chakra. Swadhisthana. Can everyone pronounce that?
Swadhisthana.
It's a combination of two words, swa and adhisthana. Adhishthana means? Adhishthana means a place, abode, residence. Adhishthana. And swa means one's own. So swadhishthana means one's own living place. That's the meaning, one's own abode, it says. And it is almost very, very close to the Mooladhara Chakra, they say. You know, the distance between them is almost negligible, so it's very close. It's slightly above and slightly behind the mentally, if you want to visualize. You know what they say is, to visualize the Mooladhara Chakra, you imagine a spot which is the width of two fingers above the anus. Okay? And that kind of mental picture of the Mooladhara Chakra, right? And then you shift that spot half inch up and half inch to the back side, that becomes the Swadhisthana Chakra. So they are very, very close to each other. That's how we picture them, mentally. Okay? So sacrum, genitals, you know, whatever. I don't know. The element is water. Okay, so this really represents fluidity, motion, you know, all those good characteristics that water has, taste. Okay. There are six petals, and those are the letters of the Sanskrit alphabet that are associated with each of the petals. And these are, like I said, these are the seed sounds that you need to repeat mentally if you want to activate that particular nerve in that chakra. Okay? And it's a circle with crescent moon. Petals are vermilion or orange, red, whatever. You know. Now, you know, again, if you read, for example, the description by, for example, Swami Satyananda, Bihar School of Yoga, right? He has given his own description of his experience of Kundalini rising. And he says, when I experienced these chakras, they were a different color than what this mentioned in the ancient text. He says, what do I make of it? He says, for everyone it's different. Maybe the original yogi who wrote those, he had a different color scheme in the mind when they experienced it. But he says, my experience is different. And same thing with some of the other accounts that I've read. For example, Gopi Krishna's account will say, you know, he had a different color scheme in his mind when he experienced those. Right? So, again, the air is vyana. Remember, there are five vayus, five airs. This is vyana. Seed sound is vam. Like I said, this first one was lam. This is vam. Then ram, etc. That's how they go. And I think I would like to do that meditation at the end, because that's a very instructive kind of a meditation also. Takes us through the chakras. So tell me when it's about 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes before four.
Tell you when it's 10 minutes before four?
Right.
Okay.
That way, you know, I can
okay.
start the meditation at that time.
Okay.
Okay, now this chakra is very strongly related to, you know, the aspect of desire, sexuality, you know, all the kind of the physical things that people need, okay? So all the pleasures and, you know, sexuality, procreation, etc., all controlled by this chakra. If it is malfunctioning, then some of those things, impotence, frigidity, kidney, uterine problems, stiff lower back, etc. Crocodile is the animal associated with it. There are books, you know, that I've seen that go into great depth on the significance of each of these elements. Every one of them. What does the crocodile mean? What does the ram mean? What does the elephant mean? All that. Great. What are these deities mean? What are the different significances of these? Very great detail. It's amazing. Okay. The Vishnu deity, this is the preserver, has four heads or four... that's not right. I've got four hands. Did I say heads? No. it's showing four hands basically, and each having these items, conch, a wheel, a metal club, and a lotus. They're in the hands, not in the heads. I don't know why I... Okay, I need to check that. Okay. So, one of the things that is mentioned very strongly about this chakra is that this is really the seat of samskaras. Okay, and that's one of the things which is strongly mentioned about this chakra. Everyone talks about that. So, what is samskara and what do they do to us? That's the question. What is samskara or sanskara? That word is pronounced as either samskara or sanskara, depending on where in India you're from. If you're from the south, you will say samskara. If you're from where I am from, in the north, we say sanskara. What are they?
It's the way you behave.
Based on?
Yeah.
Based on past impressions that we carry in the mind. So, sanskaras are all the embedded impressions that we carry in our mind.
Would that be karma too? Or no?
It's based on karma, yeah. It's based on karma, yep.
And is it always past or can it be present?
Well, we are creating, as we experience things, as we experience, it creates a memory, it creates an impression in the mind, which becomes a sanskara.
Okay.
So, like behavior patterns, right? How do we develop behavior patterns? Because we had something, some experience in the past, which we liked. So we repeat that because we liked it. We want to do it again. We repeat it more often, more frequently. It becomes a habit. And that becomes a behavior pattern then. So that's how we develop behavior patterns. But they're all based on these sanskaras. Sanskaras are impressions that we have in our mind, in our memory bank, which also carry a label whether we liked that experience or we did not like that experience. That becomes sanskara. But if we like it, we like to repeat it and we make it a habit. Then it becomes a behavior. If we dislike it, we avoid it. Okay? Hate it. Stay away from it. That becomes a sanskara. Alright? Kids do that all the time, right? So the mother tries to feed the kids some kind of food, you know. I don't like it. But you never tried it. Mom, I told you I don't like it. Give it a try once. Don't you hear me? I don't like it. Sanskara. Either from this birth or from the previous birth. They identify that food with something that they did not like, either yesterday or in past life, and that becomes a sanskara. The kid is very strong in his or her mind. I don't like it. I don't want to touch it. Try as hard as you want.
Is it something like attitude?
It becomes an attitude eventually, yeah. Everything eventually, behavior, attitude, you know, that's all that is based on the structure of the sanskara. And this chakra is the seat, sort of the strongest point where the sanskaras have an influence on us. And that is why they say, this Swadhisthana, at least in the book that I read on from Bihar school, this becomes the strongest holdover for our progress higher. Because we cannot get past the sanskaras very easily. It doesn't say that you have to completely eliminate them. All it's saying is that get a handle on them and then loosen their hold on us. Then you can go past this chakra. That's why it's a very hard chakra to cross over because of this whole hold of the sanskaras on us. Does everyone get a picture of what sanskaras are? It's an important concept because, you know, there's a lot of stuff we talk about based on sanskaras. Patanjali's Yoga Sutra is all geared, the entire focus there is to diminish the influence of the sanskaras. That's the entire focus of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. Okay. So that's a very, very important concept, especially from the yoga perspective. Diminish the influence of the sanskaras.
Can the sanskara be transmitted from parents to children? Not via genes.
No. You can transmit other things through genes.
But he potentially doesn't talk about sacred chakra. So is he talking about sanskaras that are affecting our mind?
Yes, absolutely. He's talking about sanskaras that affect our mind, our behavior, our thoughts, our everything. Absolutely. But he doesn't talk about chakras. He doesn't.
And what's his main way of getting rid of it?
Eight limbs of yoga. You practice the eight limbs of yoga, that will help you diminish the influence of the sanskaras, and which will eventually cleanse your mind of all the negativity, sharpen the intellect to a point that ego has no more influence on you. That's the whole formula for Patanjali. That's the formula, that's it. Okay? Diminish the influence of the sanskaras, sharpen the intellect, reduce the influence of the ego, and you're good to go. Then only you can realize who you are. Self-realization happens only at that point. That's it. It's a very simple formula.
You said three things. You like we listed them, 1, 2, 3. Can you say them again?
Well,
you said then you're ready to go.
Right. So, well, you know, let me rephrase that statement, because I just said it in a hurry. You know, there is a sutra there. In Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, there is a sutra which introduces the eight limbs of yoga. Okay? And it's a digression, but I hope it's a meaningful digression. I'd like to give you that sutra more than anything else, because that sutra really sums up what can be done through the practice of yoga. Okay? So that says, again, some of you, anybody know Sanskrit at all? Little bit? Okay, so this sutra is Yogang Anushthanat Ashuddhikshaye Jnana Deeptihi A Vivek Khyatehe. It's a very beautiful sutra, and I try to repeat this as often as I can, because it really sums up what yoga can do for us. So he says, by the practice of these eight limbs of yoga, Yogang Anushthanat Ashuddhikshaye, that means on the diminishing of ashuddhis, or the impurities of the mind. Impurities of the mind come because of the sanskaras. Okay, so ashuddhi kshaye. Kshaye means diminish or eliminate the influence of all the impurities of the mind. Jnana deeptihi. Jnana means true knowledge, true understanding of who we are. Deepti is the light. So it says, the light of true knowledge shines through. Aviveka khyatehe, until you are completely, viveka is pure discriminatory wisdom. So he says, you attain pure discriminatory wisdom, and that's when you have self-realization. So that's a very beautiful sutra in Patanjali. And in a crude language, what I said was, diminish the sanskaras, eliminate the influence of the ego, okay? So sharpen the intellect, eliminate the influence of the ego, diminish the sanskaras. Those are the three at a rough level which we understand every day. So eliminate the influence of the sanskaras, sharpen the intellect, and
eliminate
the negative influence of the ego. When we do that, then, like I said, you know, we're good to go. Then we are home. Home run. That was a digression.
Question. The sanskaras, would I be right in thinking that those are perceptions that we have now that may or may not be based on any fact or right or wrong? It's just what we think.
What we think is based on sanskaras.
But they are not necessarily truths. They're just how we perceive.
We perceive. What do you mean we perceive?
Well,
Give me an example.
Okay. So the samskara is, okay, I don't like peas. Let's just say, that's it. And it may not have anything to do whether I even know what peas taste like. This is just in my mind. I don't like this.
Yeah, but what... So again, we have to. That's where I need to go to the depth of that. What makes you believe that I don't like it?
Well, that's what I'm asking. Is that it may not be relevant to anything?
No, it is. That's the whole point. Yes, it is. So that's the whole point. See, the way we decide whether we like something or not is through a process where we try to create a match. Match with whatever exists in the mind. So if the mother shows the child peas, for example, right? Now the child immediately goes into the memory bank, tries to find a match. And if the match even closely says that this looks like something that I did not like, because that's how it is in my sanskaras, whether it is from this life or from the past life, it doesn't matter. But this matches with something that I never liked, therefore I'm going to declare I don't like it. It's based on that. It's never based on nothing.
So it's based on some truth from somewhere.
Somewhere, exactly.
Your own psyche.
Right. Okay. That's sanskara. Always based on what's in the mind. Always.
So does it mean it's a preconceived notion but in a negative way?
Whether negative or positive, it's a preconceived notion, yes. That's it. Negative or positive, who knows?
Based on some experience you had somewhere.
Somewhere in the past, whether it is this life or previous life, according to yoga philosophy, it doesn't matter. Is that the question? Right? It's preconceived because it's already in my sanskara. That's why it is preconceived. And I've already labeled it as such. I have labeled it as good, bad, pleasant, unpleasant, love, hate. Everything has been labeled there. Everything. And that's why it is a sanskara. And if it is labeled as something pleasant, I have been repeating it over and over again, it becomes a habit. You get the idea?
Even if it's a bad one.
Even if it's a bad one, exactly. And most of the time it is. That's the whole problem. Most of the time it is.
So this shows up in love, relationships, marriages, all these things. The samskaras are the... things that can sabotage the whole relationship.
Why not? Not they can, they do.
They will.
Okay. Any other thoughts, questions? This is a great discussion, you know.
Yeah.
It's, we don't have to stick to this. I mean, this is life. We're trying to understand life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Could also be positive, it need not be negative.
Yeah, obviously, absolutely.
Yeah. That's why we are still alive, I think. Some right choices.
I'm saying you didn't see that as negative, I'm saying it could also be positive. Positive experience.
Yes. Positive, negative. Again, who decides whether it's positive or negative? If it's decided by the ego, then it's a problem. That's where the whole problem is. Who decides whether it's positive or negative? If it is decided by the ego, trouble. Because, as she said, even the bad things, you know, we keep emphasizing those because the ego likes it. We like a piece of cake. The ego loves it, right? The intellect wants to get away from it because it can cause me, hypertension or whatever, cholesterol, all that. But ego loves it. So we keep eating it, so it becomes a habit. Now, the moment that cake comes in front, I cannot resist it. It's a habit now. Even though I know it's bad for me, it has become so much of a habit because of that label, I like it, I like it, eat it, I like it, eat it, I like it, eat it. It becomes a habit. Terrible habit. All right, so... anything I want to emphasize here?
The last two bullets on the right.
Yes.
For example, what you were just describing, pleasure without attachment, it's pleasure with attachment is will be negative.
Yes.
Because when I first read that, I didn't know what that meant.
Yes.
And also on sexuality, what is sublimation?
Sublimation is, again, you know, these are concepts from the Kundalini, from the tantric aspect. What they say is that you have to learn how to sublimate your sexual potency rather than repression. Okay? Even, you know, there is this whole side of Tantra called the left-hand Tantra. Anybody heard of that?
That was my next question. Go ahead.
There's the whole side of Tantra called the... So there are two branches of Tantra, right? One is called the Vamapanthi, the other is called the Dakshinapanthi. Okay? Have you heard, anybody heard that term? Vamapantha and Dakshinapantha. Dakshin means the right, Vama means the left. The Vamapanthis, they actually believe that you can attain liberation through the act of sex and even eating meat, etc. Okay? And that's what they follow. Okay, but there are very strong and very strict guidelines on how to lead your life if you want to follow that path. But again, as things happen, people don't follow all those guidelines, but they try to follow that path. And then they get into trouble. Okay? So, according to that path, there is all these techniques and procedures that you have to follow, even during the sexual act. Okay? You have to learn how to control so that the men, they don't go through their ejaculation, and women, they can control their secretions. There are all procedures given there. And if you can do that, that energy becomes a positive energy. It converts into what they term as ojas and tejas. Those are the two terms they use. Okay, these two terms represent very positive flows of energy in the body. So if you can learn how to control the sexual act, you can convert that energy which will be dissipated otherwise into ojas and tejas, which eventually can help you with the kundalini rising. That's the sublimation part. You sublimate it, not repress it. It becomes sublime energy. That's why it's called sublimation. See? This is all a part of the left-hand Tantra, as it's called, Vamapanthi. Oh, I've mentioned it here, left-hand Tantra.
Three minutes left, yeah.
Okay, so, well, you know, all I've mentioned here is in terms of the sacral chakra are these few physical exercises that you can do to help with the chakra, with the stimulation, activation, cleansing of this chakra, of the Swadhisthana chakra, that's the name, Swadhisthana. There's a very popular book by Anodia Judith. Anybody heard that name? On the chakras, etc. It's a popular book in the sense that she has claimed several hundred thousand copies sold and all that. Unfortunately, what I find is all her translations from Sanskrit to English are wrong. She never bothered to check with anybody, apparently. So pretty much all... I found it very unfortunate, you know, such a popular author, but she didn't care to check the English translation of all these Sanskrit words. Most of them are wrong. And because her translations are wrong, her commentary is biased based on her own translation, wherever she picked it from. So, it's somehow misguided in some ways. I'm just mentioning this because it's a very popular book and you might run into that book by Anodia Judith.